Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. After yesterday's New Hampshire primary, there's talk of revolution across the political spectrum.
What the people here have said is that given the enormous crises facing our country, it is just too late for the same old establishment politics and establishment economics. The people want real change.
We are going to start winning again. We don't win anymore as a country. We don't win on trade. We don't win with the military. We can't beat ISIS. We don't win with anything. We are going to start winning again. And we're going to win so much. You are going to be so happy. We are going to make America so great again, maybe greater than ever before.
And if it wasn't obvious, that was Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, the two victors in the New Hampshire primary yesterday. Well, next steps, Nevada, South Carolina, and then on to Super Tuesday. Meanwhile, today, Carly Fiorina has suspended her campaign, and there are reports that Chris Christie is considering doing the same. But let's take a step back here for a moment. We are hungering for some historical perspective because it's easy to say there's a political backlash or revolution or something afoot. But Americans have catapulted anti-establishment candidates into the limelight before. So what do those moments hold? What lessons do those moments hold for us today? For answers, we're joined now from New York by Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University and author of numerous books on the American presidency. Professor Zelizer, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. First, let me just get your perspective on New Hampshire yesterday before we fully dive in to historical lessons here. What did you make of the outcome of the primary?
Well, look, it was a big night for both parties. I think if everyone was very cautious reading anything into Iowa, they're more confident saying that things are changing for both parties as a result of New Hampshire. For the Democrats, you know, I don't think anyone expected the victory of Sanders to be so large and to cut into so many different parts of the New Hampshire constituency, including independents and women. And Donald Trump delivered on what he had promised. He comes out of New Hampshire looking like he's starting to assemble an actual coalition rather than just a narrow part of the Republican constituency that's quote-unquote angry. So both come out, I think, quite formidable, and certainly there's going to be a long primary season ahead.
Well, from your perspective, what is really the animating energy here of for a lot of voters? I mean, in a sense, Sanders and Trump are kind of tapping into the same deep well of unhappiness, unrest, genuine disaffection with the American political system here.
Yeah, look, there's commonalities and differences. The commonalities are both are tapping into the anger with the way that politics works and the notion that Washington is broken and not functioning to deal with the problems of our time. And both are tapping into a frustration with the economy, where many middle-class Americans don't feel secure, even if we're in the middle of an economic recovery. But then there's differences. I think, you know, Bernie Sanders is trying to put forward in some ways a very traditional Democratic agenda that talks about government, that talks about social and economic equality, and offering a set of ideas that some Democrats find compelling. And I think Donald Trump is fueling some of the angrier elements of the Republican electorate, sometimes playing into xenophobia and nativism, and doesn't have the same kind of coherent worldview that he's offering his supporters. So there's some parts that are the same, but I think they are not the same kind of candidate.
Okay, so looking back over the past century or so, you know, we were thinking of a couple other moments in presidential history which are worth exploring for lessons on how to understand what's going on today. But I'm wondering, you know, for you, pick a particular race. What moment in U.S. history has echoes that we're hearing today?
Well, I actually keep thinking of the 1976 campaign where you had insurgents within both parties as opposed to third-party challenges. You had Jimmy Carter, who comes out of nowhere for the Democrats and appeals to a country that's, you know, still reeling from Watergate, wins the nomination and wins the presidency. And that same year, although he's not successful, Ronald Reagan surprises Gerald Ford and challenges him in the primary and almost wins, tapping into a lot of the sentiment being expressed by the conservative parts of the electorate in states like Texas. And both talked about economic issues like today when the economy was stagnant, and both talked about the problems both with Washington and their own party leaders.
Well, 1976, an instructive moment for sure, but wondering if we can dial the clock back even further. What about, say, you know, early 20th century and Teddy Roosevelt? I mean, in 1912, his platform, in part, was focused on fighting the power of business interests, you know, in the wake of the Gilded Age.
Absolutely. I think that 1912 campaign is important as a precedent to a lot of what Bernie Sanders is doing. The former president runs as a third-party candidate, and in the end, he won't win, but he will mobilize a lot of the electorate and more importantly, put forth ideas that have remained part of American politics. And two issues that were central. One was trying to diminish the growth of economic wealth at the very top of the income ladder, saying you can't have a democracy if income is skewed that way. And a second important aspect of progressive era politics in the 1912 campaign was that the political system was broken.
That's right.
And that political reform was not just another extra issue, but it was actually at the center of whether you'll ever get policies that grow the middle class rather than just growing the wealthier classes of America. And Sanders, in some ways, reflects some of those themes.
But, you know, one of the differences, obviously, between, or maybe not so obvious, I'm changing my mind about this, but I was going to say that Teddy Roosevelt was not an outsider. Neither is Bernie Sanders. I mean, he's a senator here. Roosevelt had gone to Harvard. He'd already been president before his run as a third party candidate with the Bull Moose Party. So he knew the system, though.
Yeah, he did. And he knew the system from the highest levels of power, and he had been part of it. In a way, Bernie Sanders, as one member of Congress, did not. But it is worth remembering, Bernie Sanders is not an outsider. He has been in politics his whole life, and he's been in Washington for a lot of his life. And so I think part of what we underestimate right now is how savvy a campaigner he is and how much he understands the political process. That's where the Carter model comes back, too, in that they give the appearance of being outsiders and not really understanding the system. But as we're seeing, he's pretty shrewd. So you can be part of the system, and you can also challenge that same establishment. TR did it in 1912, and it had lasting repercussions, and I think we're seeing the same today.
Right. And then a relative of Teddy Roosevelt comes along in 1932, FDR, and sort of does it all over again. I mean, we have the wake of the 1929 stock market crash, the Great Depression, et cetera. FDR comes in and wins a landslide in 1932. What was it, like 22 million votes to Herbert Hoover's 15 million votes?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an important part of history in that you see, even though Teddy Roosevelt didn't win in 1912 and, you know, really didn't come close to winning, some of the ideas that he put forward would immediately impact Woodrow Wilson during his first term, but had lasting consequences in that Franklin Roosevelt turned to a lot of the themes and issues that had been raised. And then when the party had changed and the conditions were right, put them into action. So the ideas were in some ways as important as the actual candidacy. And I think that's an issue that we need to think about today, regardless of whether Sanders is able to win or not.
So the ideas from FDR, just to remind everyone, in 1932, his platform called for unemployment assistance, old age insurance under state laws, labor protection, legislation to protect labor, farming assistance, repeal of prohibition, and a balanced budget. He ended up jettisoning the idea for a balanced budget when he came into office. But these were ideas that really shaped America for several generations thereafter. One of the things that FDR had, which it, I'm not sure anybody entering the White House at the end of this election cycle will have, though, is congressional buy-in. So I'm wondering, you know, given that, what are the lessons that we can take from Teddy Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt about the political moment if it seems as if it's not just the White House today, but Congress itself, which seems to be somewhat broken?
Well, one lesson from both Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson in the 1960s, in 64 and 65, is that the only way presidents really have these moments to do big things and to change the way public policy work is when they have a Congress that is willing and open to doing that. Both FDR and Lyndon Johnson had that for a time. They had large majorities, and they had majorities that were sympathetic to their legislative agenda. It's unlikely that if Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders wins, they will have that. Not only will they have at least partially a Republican Congress, but a Republican Party which will be dead set against any kind of significant legislation.
I mean, isn't it fair to say the same thing about the Democrats if, you know, say Donald Trump wins? They'd be dead set against it, anything that Trump would want to do.
Absolutely, although it's likely Republicans will control the House, and Republicans still have a chance to control the Senate. So the difference is Donald Trump has better odds at governing with the Republican Congress, and that would give him a lot more room to maneuver, probably, than a Democrat at this point.
Hmm. Final question, Professor Zelitzer, just briefly. I mean, given the examples that we discussed here, 76, 1912, 1932, does it seem to you that when Americans do follow the path of a true insurgent candidate all the way to the White House, that policy change follows thereafter?
Not always. You know, in the end, Jimmy Carter certainly wasn't able to accomplish most of the changes that he hoped to. Even Ronald Reagan in 1980, he does get a huge tax cut and deregulates parts of government. But in the end, he, too, isn't able to translate a lot of his agenda into policy. Democrats in the House block him. So insurgent, inspiring candidates, even those who win, don't always achieve the kind of changes. They usually don't achieve the kind of changes they were hoping to do.
Julian Zelitzer is professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, author of numerous books, including The Fierce Urgency of Now, Lyndon Johnson, Congress, and the Battle for the Great Society. Julian Zelitzer, always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.